Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
What's going to happen to and for our kids? As we continue to find a new normal during the coronavirus pandemic, the question looms pretty large and a tremendous amount of uncertainty remains. For example, the Massachusetts Department of Early Education and Care had to ease restrictions for childcare facilities and summer camps over concerns that the guidelines were financially unrealistic, but now they face concerns that those adjustments could put the health and safety of children and staff at risk. So how do we thread the needle of care and education from infancy all the way through college? And how well has the state done in providing frameworks? We turn to WBUR's Carrie Young and Fred Tice for more. Welcome back, Carrie and Fred.
Hi, Tiziana.
Thanks, Tiziana.
Okay, so I have to admit I've had a little whiplash trying to follow all of this. I just want to start by asking both of you, in covering these issues, do you feel like there's a clear vision and plan for moving forward?
Well, for me, I feel like for early education and care, there is becoming a clear path forward, I guess mostly because they're having to start the soonest. But for the K through 12 sector, that there's still a lot more question marks there for now anyway.
And for
How
higher
about
education,
you, Fred?
Yeah, I would say for higher education, Tiziana, my answer would be no. I would say there are two visions and two plans. Some colleges are moving full steam ahead to reopen campuses and welcome all the back, and others are indicating most classes are going to be online, and then yet others are somewhere in between the two.
And do you think that we're going to continue to kind of have moving targets well into the fall, or are we eventually going to be in some stable place where people regularly know what to expect?
Colleges
Carrie.
Are saying that
Fred,
yeah,
go ahead. Yep.
Yeah.
No, that's fine,
so college,
Fred.
So colleges are saying, you know, by and large, they're going to decide by July 1st. I think we'll have announcements, but the situation continues to change. And I think you could expect colleges to change their minds as the summer moves ahead.
To add to that, I mean, with the K through 12 schools, you know, a lot of the question marks are coming from the fact that they're waiting on official guidance from the state, whether that's either guidelines that are flexible to like regulations that will be inflexible. The state hasn't released that yet. You know, that's coming out any day, but, you know, so they're hoping to have a better idea come July, even August, but a lot of those plans are still up in the air and being finalized. With early education and care, you know, they're taking in plans for reopening right now, actually, and they're making plans 2 months at a time. So we have in the short term or in the short run, some idea of, you know, what that's going to look like, but they leave a little bit more room of, you know, for that to be changing as they go along.
All right, so let's backtrack, Carrie, and I'll stay with you for a minute. Let's talk about childcare, which we talked about right at the top. What are the new restrictions and guidelines for childcare facilities?
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the biggest changes have to do with class sizes, at least for centers that provide care, as opposed to caregivers in their home. Anyway, for preschool-aged kids that go to center-based care, for them, each room can have no more than 10 children. The Department of Education and Early Education and Care also wants providers to start doing a health screening each day when kids show up. And then even things like drop-off are going to be looking different. Parents won't be allowed to come in with their kids anymore. There's going to be, you know, a spot outside where they'll have to meet a caregiver and they'll sort of go the rest of the way. And then there's also, you know, things over sharing that's going to be greatly reduced. Water tables, they won't be allowed anymore, at least at first. And staff, if they can't be social distancing or remain a certain distance away from kids, they're going to have to be wearing masks. Those students, that won't be mandatory, the mask wearing, but it will be highly encouraged.
So, Carrie, are parents and facilities concerned that parents aren't going to want to send their kids back to the group childcare situation?
Yeah, there is a lot of concern about that, actually. You know, I mean, how much demand will there be for the supply to reopen? You know, that is a big question mark. You know, and that demand also turns into, you know, like tuition money. And these are small businesses, you know, they're trying to restart their business that's now been closed for several months. And, you know, some parents, we've heard a mixed results there. Like some parents are like, yes, I cannot wait to send my kids back. When is your opening date? And others are a little bit more hesitant for a variety of reasons, and say, you know, I might wait until August or even like when like the typical school year starts to send my child back. And so the state's playing a little bit of a game trying to like anticipate that, but it's still a little hard at this point. You know, and they also want to make sure that providers don't start closing in big numbers if they can't get the numbers that they're expecting back and that expected income coming back as well.
Yeah. So what about that? Is the state making any plans for assistance for facilities that may be wobbling, to use your word?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the type of facility that you are and who you serve. So providers that accept state subsidies, so families that send their kids in using a state subsidy, those providers, I've been told, they've been getting payments from the state through the shutdown. So they've been supported a little bit in that way for the last few months now. State officials have also talked about providing some extra funding as time goes on, like in the form of grants or extra funding, just to help these facilities get back on their feet when reopening, you know, even for things like extra costs for PPE and whatnot. But, you know, this is not everyone in this sector. There are a lot of providers who don't accept subsidies and they haven't gotten that support so far and they aren't expected to, at least right now. The Edify desk did talk to the Early Education and Care Commissioner, Sam Eigner-Treewerge, about why the assistance is only being targeted to facilities taking subsidies. We did catch her on a cell phone, keep in mind, but here's how she responded.
This is an issue of with limited dollars making the most strategic decisions possible and knowing that the industry as a whole is impacted, that these dollars are not going to allow us to address the full need.
Yeah, again, what she's saying here is there are limited funds, and the priority right now for them is to make sure that the families that have the greatest need can get this access to this care that they need. But for private providers, you know, they're saying we're struggling financially too, and they would also like some economic support here.
So, Carrie, let's jump ahead to K through 12. Let's look into the fall. What's next school year going to look like? Do we know?
So we don't know, but for sure, really. You know, one thing that I've been hearing, that the patterns that I've been hearing, is that schools are sort of tossing around three types of models. One is that we stay 100% remote like we've been doing. Another one is to try and send everyone back 100%. And then there's somewhere in between the two, like a hybrid model where like they take a cohort of kids and let them be in the school building with teachers for, you know, a week or 2 weeks, and then they rotate. But right now, like where we'll land there's just a lot more questions than answers before we'll be able to, you know, come to an answer on that question. You know, a lot of school leaders are feeling this pressure from communities to release these solid plans, and parents are getting anxious. So are some of the school staff, but, you know, school leaders just really don't know. And I spoke with Bob Tremblay about this. He's the superintendent at Framingham Public Schools. And here's kind of how he describes his situation.
We don't have the answers that we're just keeping to ourselves and not yet ready to share. We simply don't have the answers because we're working literally in the dark here.
And as I mentioned at the beginning, that like one of the biggest unknowns is the guidance and expected regulations from the state. You know, they are working on getting that out. I've been told the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education will be releasing that this month. So that's any day now. We have a little bit of insight as to what those new rules will be. You know, they came out with some personal protective equipment guidelines about a week ago. And so we do know that students and staff will be required to wear masks. And at least at the moment, they're looking at class sizes limited to 10 students and 2 adults.
So time to get Fred in as well. Lots of concerns, Carrie, about how the additional remote learning, other kinds of disparities in access to education opportunities in these hybrid models will affect existing inequities. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You broke up a little
Carrie,
bit.
Do
there.
I have you?
Yes. Sorry, you broke up there for a second. I think your question was about how the inequities in resources might impact kids if we continue on this remote learning path. And, you know, that is a big concern among educators, you know, whether you are a student who might have a disability. You know, a lot of those teachers have really specialized skills that parents, a lot of parents are really struggling to try to replicate at home. Or there could be things where it's just having the resources, having the computer and the internet access to be able to get the assistance you need with important skills like reading or like developing, you know, your math proficiency. And so, you know, if you are struggling with those types of things, continuing in this asynchronous type of learning, that's going to be hard for a lot of students to make progress.
Okay, so Carrie and Fred, I understand that I'm having some technical difficulties on my end. I'm remote hosting, so if I'm sounding a little choppy, I apologize. Fred, I want to turn to you about the higher ed portion of this. What's the fall going to look like on university campuses?
Well, Tisana, it depends on the university. Some are planning to reopen, like Boston University. It's planning to administer thousands of tests a day to isolate COVID-positive students and singles with their own bathrooms. It'll offer all undergraduate classes online and in person so that students can choose to take classes from home, from their dorm, or in the classroom. But others are headed in a very different direction. Harvard seems to be headed towards offering all but a few classes online as it decides how many undergraduates to allow back to campus. A few who have no place else to go, 30 to 40%, or the entire student body.
So, Fred, how are students handling this kind of uncertainty and the variability depending on where they're going to be?
Well, students want to come back to campus, but not everybody thinks that's a very good idea. I talked to Harvard graduate student Max Ehrenfreund. He taught undergraduates this spring, and he remembers what happened in March when Harvard shut the campus down and told students to pack up and go home.
They just threw a party. They started around 3 p.m. that day. I think it was a Tuesday. And they just kept going all night. And that's exactly how I expect Harvard students would react if they were invited back to campus in the fall.
Ehrenfreund says the students would be really excited to see their friends, to be back with the people they know and love. And he just did not see them being too careful about the virus under those circumstances.
Okay, Fred, before I let you and Carrie go, one last question for you. I saw some news regarding Harvard and standardized testing. I know that's come up for some other universities as well. Can you catch us up to speed on that one briefly?
Absolutely. So like BU, Harvard is planning to offer thousands of tests a day if it does bring students back to campus in large numbers. It's also planning to offer help to other colleges. Already, the Broad Institute, run by Harvard and MIT, has provided testing for the community at large. And with regard to colleges at large, a committee led by Wellesley College President Paula Johnson is working on recommendations. I heard from one college president that the expectation is that colleges will test all their students twice a week, but BU President Bob Brown has said he expects the frequency of testing to vary depending on whether a student lives alone or shares a bathroom with lots of other students.
All right. So that's a lot there. Fred and Carrie, what's the most important thing you're each going to watch for going forward? Carrie, you first.
Okay, you go.
Well, I mean, for me, what I am watching for in K through 12 schools is funding and budgets. There was the new Student Opportunity Act that was supposed to send a lot of, much needed funding to schools that may not be coming through. So we're anticipating some cuts. We'll watch to see what they are.
And how about you, Fred?
I'm waiting to see which colleges survive. Already we've seen that Boston College is absorbing Pine Manor College. Other colleges are struggling. They need to have students return to campus. But at some colleges, attendance is going to be down this fall. And it's not clear how long they can survive by being exclusively online.
All right. That's WBUR's Fred Tice and Carrie Young. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tisiana.